Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality. That's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Monday, May 6th, 2024, the 1202nd day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening via a paid subscription on Substack at imyourmoderator.substack.com. When you become a paid subscriber, you can get the ad-free experience and participate in the comment section on Substack, as well as interactive live streams every Wednesday. You can become a paid subscriber for $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't, or you simply don't want to, just listen to the show with the ads on Substack, a variety of podcast platforms, and of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/I'mYourModerator. Anyone who understands the roller coaster we've been on these past few years knows we haven't reached the end yet, and there may still be hard times to come. And as we add $1 trillion to the national debt every 100 days, we could be headed for some shaky financial times. If you're like me, you're figuring out how to diversify and make sure some seeds are planted for whatever may come. And that's one of the many reasons I think Bitcoin is part of our future. But it's not only about money. Bitcoin looks to be a critical part of the next generation of technology, communications, energy, verification, and even national defense. I'd encourage everyone to do their research and do it now. And if you're convinced of the likelihood that Bitcoin is an essential part of our future, then you'll need an on-ramp. I recommend River. River empowers you to grow your portfolio without any unwanted surprises and eliminates third-party custodians, putting you in control of your assets. Open an account with no minimum purchase requirement. You can get your Bitcoin journey started with just $1. Visit partner.river.com/reasonable to create your River account today. That's partner.river.com/reasonable. Now, I know that many of you out there understand the need to diversify assets, or maybe you're looking to protect your retirement savings, but you're not quite there yet on Bitcoin and you feel better about precious metals. I get that too. I think going in multiple directions is wise, and I do that myself. And when it comes to buying precious metals, you want to be working with a good company. And that's why I've partnered with GoldCo. GoldCo is a six-time Inc. 5000 winner, 2022 Company of the Year, and they've helped people like you and me place over $2 billion in gold and silver. And I have gotten silver from GoldCo. And right now, they're offering my supporters up to $10,000 in bonus silver while supplies last. Don't pass this offer up. Go to reasonablegold.com now. This is your opportunity to protect you and your family from an out-of-control government before it's too late. So don't wait a second longer. Take action today. Click on the link in the podcast notes or go to reasonablegold.com now and get your free gold kit, your free IRA kit. You'll be glad you did. And just a note, this week we will be trying the later time for the live stream. That's going to begin at 6 p.m. Eastern time this Wednesday. And I will send out a link for that live stream within the 24 hours prior to that live stream. So at some point after 6 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. And so if you want to propose a topic or an article or ask a question, just do so in the comment section of that post that you will receive on Substack if you are a paid subscriber. All right, so let's get into it. I always like to take notice whenever we hit another 100 days in this ongoing period of every dystopian movie and novel playing out in real life right before our eyes. And so we just over the weekend hit 1,200 full days of Barack Obama's third term as served by the half-dead, demented, degenerate, ventriloquist dummy, fake proxy president Joe Biden. 1,200 days. We all thought on day one that the world was ending, and it hasn't. At least, not that we're aware of. Maybe the world ended a long time ago and our consciousness is just living on in a realm of our own creation. Or maybe God is just orchestrating an iteration of his own version of SimCity where we all just interact inside our little snow globe that we're encouraged to believe is some vast and infinite godless universe. But assuming we haven't been thoroughly deceived for our entire lives about space and time, well, we've made it 1,200 days and the world hasn't ended. So hey there, congratulations everybody. And as I consistently make sure to remind people, things for us, from our perspective, vis-a-vis this massive power struggle, mostly based on abstract power projection, our worst days happened a long time ago, probably around 1,200 days ago. And despite some various speed bumps and setbacks in the last 3.5 years, things have essentially been moving in our direction the entire time. Now, I know some people think that's crazy because the mainstream narrative hasn't incorporated that idea. In fact, from their perspective, things for people like us are getting worse all the time. And if we are going to trust that they are accurately portraying the state of play, then maybe we go along with them. Maybe we're blackpilled. Maybe we agree that our goals are getting progressively further away and that the world is working against us. But it's not. People are waking up and they are understanding that they have been lied to. And if they initially continue to believe that we are their problem, that's all good. They'll figure it out, maybe too late, but they'll figure it out. And the truth is that most people are. And here we are, 1,200 days in, the awakening process moving forward at an unbelievable pace. And there's good reason to believe that the process as it's playing out can no longer be reversed. The regime needs to get everybody back on the same page, their page, subject to their manipulation, the pressures that society exerts on itself to conform. The people who have stepped outside of that and seen that for what it is, they're not going back in, no matter what the regime attempts in creating the sort of drama and trauma that might get everyone back on the same page. And I did not intend this, but that actually ends up being a perfect segue to the point that not only will they not get everyone back on the same page, we are seeing event after event after event that, at least narratively speaking, seems initiated by them, and it is getting all of us on the same page against them. And it is inviting new people to join us on that page against them. The major topic in the news this morning to start this brand new week is the potential for the quote-unquote former president to be sent to jail for saying the no-no words. This is the Daily Mail reporting this morning. Donald Trump threatened with jail again after judge finds him in contempt on gag order violations. Judge Juan Merchan once again found Donald Trump in contempt for violating a gag order during his Stormy Daniels trial, slapping on a new fine and threatening to jail him if he determines violations continue. Merchan blasted Trump for continued and willful violations of the gag, barring comments on witnesses and others that he said might threaten the quote-unquote fair administration of justice. I cannot allow that to continue. As much as I do not want to impose a jail sanction, I will, if necessary and appropriate, he said inside court at the start of the 12th day of Trump's trial. The judge slapped Trump with a $1,000 fine for the violation, which comes in addition to additional findings. Okay. Following an earlier hearing that resulted in fines totaling $9,000. You got to wonder how long it will be before the uniparty left communists start pushing for the fines for violating gag orders to be increased, so that when a normal person goes on trial for anything and the judge issues a gag order suggesting that normal person is not allowed to talk about what's happening to them, the penalties will be increased to the point where the gag order actually works. You can't tell Donald Trump he might lose $10,000 and make him care. Judge Juan Merchan admonished Donald Trump and again threatened him with jail, quote unquote, if warranted, if he violates a gag order against him. It appears the $1,000 fines are not serving as a deterrent. Therefore, going forward, this court will have to consider a jail sanction, he said. The judge said Trump's repeated comments constitute a direct attack on the process and would not be allowed to continue. Defendant is hereby put on notice that if appropriate and warranted, future violations of its lawful orders will be punishable by incarceration. It's very, very scary. Now, I don't find this scary at all. I doubt you find it scary at all. Donald Trump definitely doesn't find it scary at all. But you have to wonder if normal people do, if they are actually bought into the idea that all of this is real and that this judge is going to send Donald Trump to jail for his posts on social media. And we're told this is the case while the judge and his family members have problems with what they have posted on social media, where the guy prosecuting Donald Trump was part of the illegitimate Biden administration. The judge's family members can be Democrat political actors who have a history of anti-Trump posts on their own social media, but Donald Trump isn't allowed to talk about that on his social media. Otherwise, that's in contempt of this court. The judge said Donald Trump isn't allowed to say anything, and that's just all there is to it. Now, these gag orders are being challenged. And as with everything else, these things have to work their way through the court system. Donald Trump is providing examples of all of these issues so that they can be settled, so that the lines can be drawn on the field, and so that the Trump deranged side cannot complain about how they are treated in the future because they have promoted this treatment publicly and loudly to be directed at Donald Trump and his supporters. And it's not like this is just a political disagreement. They want Trump and his supporters marginalized and silenced and imprisoned, because otherwise everyone else finds out what these people have done. I mean, imagine what it would be like if everyone found out that you were responsible for staging a very deadly pandemic so that you could steal an election, and that's just the beginning. And their only defense against any of this is that it's been debunked. But it hasn't been debunked. That can help you survive in a narrative sense for a period of time, so long as your allies are in power. But if your allies are ever out of power, if the opposition ever comes to power and decides to look and decides to publicize those things, all of a sudden, all of the things that you have been accused of are no longer debunked, because they were never debunked to begin with. The narrative control that was gained through propaganda and censorship is what held up the claim that all these various crimes were debunked. When that narrative control evaporates, everyone quickly sees that the debunkings didn't actually disprove anything. And we'll get into some more of the reaction from these people who know what it is they've done, and they know that their time is quickly running out. But first, let's just get to one more thing they've done. And this news broke on Friday with a new filing in Jack Smith's Donald Trump documents hoax. This is from Just the News on Friday evening. Trump whodunit. Prosecutors admit key evidence in document case has been tampered with. In a stunning admission, special counsel Jack Smith's team is admitting that key evidence in former President Donald Trump's classified documents criminal case was altered or manipulated since it was seized by the FBI, and that prosecutors misled the court about it for a period of time. Legal experts told Just the News the revelation could prove to be a serious problem for prosecutors and a violation of court rules to preserve evidence in the state it was seized. In a new filing Friday, Smith's team said that the order of documents in some of the boxes of memos that were seized by the FBI from Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate was altered or jumbled, leaving two different chronologies. One that was digitally scanned and another the physical order in the boxes. Since the boxes were seized and stored, appropriate personnel have had access to the boxes for several reasons, including to comply with orders issued by this court in the civil proceedings noted above for investigative purposes and to facilitate the defendant's review of the boxes, Smith's team wrote in a new court filing to U.S. District Judge Aileen Cannon. There are some boxes where the order of items within that box is not the same as in the associated scans, the prosecutors wrote. Smith's team in a footnote also conceded it had misled the court about the problem by previously declaring that the evidence had remained in the exact state it had been seized. The government acknowledges that this is inconsistent with what government counsel previously understood and represented to the court, the footnote said. The Just the News article goes into some reaction from prominent legal experts and then gets to prominent defense attorney Tim Parlatore, who worked on Trump's team earlier in the classified documents case, but is no longer involved. He said the admission is stunning on multiple levels. He also said that the revelation, quote, reinforces the incompetence of prosecutors in conducting basic criminal investigations and prosecutions that I observed when I was on the team. But at a deeper level, the loss of specific document locations is a destruction of exculpatory evidence. I went through all of the boxes at NARA, and the document order was important because it was clear to us that the boxes had been untouched since leaving the White House. For prosecutors who are trying to prove that the defendants knowingly possessed these documents and then to destroy the evidence that would undermine that claim is a very serious violation, he added. And of course, the Jack Smith illegitimate special counsel tried to reframe all of this as not that big a deal. And you could kind of hear it in the quote above, where after claiming that only appropriate personnel had dealt with these boxes and for appropriate reasons, he shifted and said, some of which were complying with what this court demanded we do and getting the defendants and their legal teams all of these documents for their review. So what they did wasn't a big deal, and the fact that they did anything at all was the fault of the court and the defendants. So to even think that something untoward happened, well, you might as well just be blaming yourself, according to Jack Smith. And if that's not good enough, try this one on for size. There are several possible explanations, including the above-described instances in which the boxes were accessed, as well as the size and shape of certain items in the box, possibly leading to movement of items, the prosecutors wrote. For example, the boxes contain items smaller than standard paper, such as index cards, books, and stationery, which shift easily when the boxes are carried, especially because many of the boxes are not full. So it all just got shuffled up. And now Trump's team is trying to pull a fast one on everybody. The Just the News article closes noting that alteration of evidence has been an issue in other major political scandals before, including Watergate, Iran-Contra, and Hillary Clinton's deletion of her email records. John Ratcliffe, who was director of national intelligence during Trump's first term, posted on X, formerly Twitter, Jack Smith admits, quote-unquote, mishandling classified documents evidence and then, quote-unquote, misrepresenting that fact to the court. Tampering with evidence and then lying to the court reeks of crossfire hurricane. When the Obama-Biden DOJ got caught doing the same thing to illegally spy on the Trump campaign. Well, you don't say. How about that? It's like there's a pattern. It's like they do this sort of thing on purpose. And the surface explanation for this sort of behavior would seem to be that they are willing to skirt the rules in order to gain an advantage for their side of the prosecution. And maybe that's true. There's almost certainly an element to which that is true. And in a real prosecution with real underlying facts being brought by a legitimate special counsel in something that wasn't obviously a kangaroo court and show trial, initiated by an illegitimate fake president and the Department of Justice under his administration, where the person being prosecuted wasn't a quote-unquote former president and also the guy who's gonna be president at this time next year, who happens to be flying all around the country to massive events where people come out and see him and chant his name and USA, combined with the fact that there's no way this is going to be tried before the quote-unquote election, maybe that surface interpretation is all we would have to consider. But since we are actually dealing with a narrative struggle here, we have to look at multiple interpretations of this. But before we discuss a potential alternative, let's get Donald Trump's reaction. Trump posted this article from John Solomon at Just the News on Truth Social. And in his post, he said, arrest deranged Jack Smith. He is a criminal. Now, are we going to see Jack Smith arrested? No, that seems totally implausible. Are we going to see the case dropped because of this? Also, no. Trump is going to suggest things like that. And you could say that in a just world, those requests would be met, but we're not in a just world. And showing that to be true is part of the point of all of this happening. So you can expect the case to proceed forward, Jack Smith ignoring all of this. It'll be like none of this ever happened. Everyone will just know that it did. And we will go through these sorts of reruns in all of these cases until people understand fully that each and every one of these charges, all of these Get Trump efforts, are as illegitimate and fact-free as every other one of these investigations, all just as bad as the J6 impeachment hoax and the Ukraine impeachment hoax and the kids in cages hoax and the very fine people hoax and the Russia collusion hoax and all the rest of it. People need to understand that these are the political prosecutions and persecutions. These are the show trials. These are the kangaroo courts that they claim to oppose in principle, that they claim to fear from an autocratic, authoritarian, dictator like Vladimir Putin or Viktor Orban or Jair Bolsonaro or, of course, Donald Trump. They will slowly realize and accept that it is the people they've supported who are doing all of these things. So let's come back to alternative explanations for why the tampering of evidence thing may be some sort of pattern with these political persecutions from corrupted and illegitimate departments of justice. Now, if your goal is to convince the country that Donald Trump is a criminal and cannot be reelected as president because he is a criminal, he has committed grave crimes against America. He has tried to overthrow the government. He has jeopardized our national security. He tried to hush a porn star that he had an affair with. He says mean things about that crazy lady who says everyone raped her. And he even hired accountants who said his real estate was worth something we don't agree it was worth. Well, what do you do when that doesn't work? And when the public narrative surrounding these trials, which was supposed to be the real weapon against Donald Trump. These trials aren't only Donald Trump's campaign. These are the regime's campaign, the Uniparty's campaign against Donald Trump, to discredit Donald Trump and the America First movement. If none of that works, narratively speaking, then what is the best move? Is it to continue to proceed with these prosecutions as they fall apart publicly in ever more embarrassing ways? They're just supposed to continue with this strategy? I can't help but see some of this in the same ways we discussed the Fannie Willis investigation falling apart. The idea is to have a gradual come down. You pull back on the public narrative about these trials, but not in any way that would diminish the public view of Donald Trump's guilt to the extent that they have, let's say, 25% or 30% or maybe 40%, but I really, really doubt that. Let's say they have 30% of the country convinced that Donald Trump is guilty of any of these things and should then go to prison. I think it's probably smaller than that, but let's say 30%. Now, if you decided that you wanted to bail out on the public narrative about these trials, you just wanted it to go away because you want to try a different tactic, you can see that the prosecutions just aren't working. They're actually backfiring and making things worse. How would you get out of them? Well, you would want something about the process to be the problem. You would want the trials to go away because there is no longer any benefit to the trials continuing. You're not going to jail Donald Trump in time. The narrative is backfiring. So you want the trials to go away, but not in any way that will jeopardize the public perception of guilt among that 30% who actually believes it. Because if you have that 30%, and again, I think it's probably smaller, but if you have those people publicly proclaiming Donald Trump's guilt and that the real problem was the process of the prosecution, then that might be their best case scenario for preserving any of it. Otherwise, it's a wasted effort, narratively speaking, and practically what everybody is going to see is absolute corruption. Now, if that was the attempt, the best case scenario in response to that would be to make sure that everybody knows the level of injustice and still hope that the trial continues. And I think that we're going to see exactly that. If the trial was to be stopped based on some evidence tampering on the order of documents in the evidence boxes, you end up with that 30% still loudly and proudly proclaiming Donald Trump's guilt while also trying to reframe themselves as the victims of an unjust process. It's the Trump judge, Aileen Cannon, who should be blamed. Not Jack Smith, not the prosecution, not Jack Smith's illegitimacy, not the fact that none of the underlying accusations happen to be true. It's just the process and the biased judge. Because if anything works in Trump's favor, that judge is biased. And if anything works against Donald Trump, that judge is not biased. And if you understand that all that ultimately matters is the court of public opinion, then you understand that Trump doesn't need these trials to go away, these political prosecutions and persecutions, and neither do we. Accept and understand the injustice on display. Understand that's what it looks like. Make the argument about the injustice. Force the other side to defend what's happening. knowing that all of this will be eventually turned around on them. I remember last fall when a few people thought I was crazy for joking about how Donald Trump was so indicted. But how does it look now? Does it seem like a serious process that is threatening Donald Trump? Or is all of this just highlighting the injustice and moving people to our side? I would suggest it's the latter, and the more dramatic these cases get, the more we will see this process of awakening accelerate. Now, there is so much panic in the air over Donald Trump's return. We are so spoiled that it's becoming hard to choose which is the most entertaining. This weekend alone, just panic everywhere. This from the New York Times was how many people spent their Sunday morning. Gallows humor and talk of escape. Trump's possible return rattles Capitol. This is from Peter Baker at the New York Times. It has become the topic of the season at Washington dinner parties and receptions. Where would you go if it really happens? Portugal, says a former member of Congress. Australia, says a former agency director. Canada, says a Biden administration official. France, says a liberal columnist. Poland, says a former investigator. They're joking. Sort of. At least in most cases. It's a gallows humor with a dark edge. Much of official Washington is bracing for the possibility that former President Donald J. Trump really could return, this time with retribution as his avowed mission. The discussion is where people might go into a sort of self-imposed exile. Whether they mean it or not, the buzz is a telling indicator of the grim mood among many in the nation's capital these days. The what if goes beyond the normal prospect of a side unhappy about a lost election. It speaks to the nervousness about a would-be president who talks of being a dictator for a day, who vows to root out enemies he calls vermin, who threatens to prosecute adversaries, who suggests a general he deems disloyal deserves death. Oh, wonderful alliteration, guy. Whose lawyers say he may have immunity, even if he orders the assassination of political rivals. Now, you could have a discussion with this communist about each and every one of those claims, and all of them would disintegrate under even light scrutiny. But that does not matter. This is a child brain speaking to other child brains. Inside the bubble, they understand that framing all of this in this manner is the only way to discredit the push for justice and accountability on the part of Donald Trump and his supporters for what these people have actually done, for what they've actually supported and participated in. They're not concerned with principles about no one being above the law, and they're not interested in sunlight being shown on all of this corruption, allowing people to judge for themselves the guilt or innocence of these people. When it comes to accusations of corruption, crimes against America, crimes against humanity, for the political subversion of our government, for the moral subversion of our culture, and their support of this illegitimate power structure operating on behalf of a global regime being targeted against their fellow Americans. But back to the New York Times. I feel like in the past 2 weeks, that conversation, for whatever reason, has just surged, said Miles Taylor, a former Trump administration official who became a vocal critic of the former president. People are feeling that it's very obvious if a second Trump term happens, it's going to be slash and burn, end quote. That's all fine with Mr. Trump and his allies. In their view, Washington's fear is the point. He is the disruptor of the elite. He is coming to break up their corrupt uniparty hold on power. And of course, uniparty there is in quotes. You are supposed to understand that the existence of the uniparty is a conspiracy theory in itself. And the uniparty right regularly joins with the uniparty left to let everyone know there is no uniparty. Joe Biden's supporters in the Democrat establishment will agree with their neocon conning counterparts, almost all of whom, it's worth noting, supported Ron DeSantis before they went and supported Nikki Haley in the fake GOP primaries. We discussed this a bit On Friday, of course, I'm not going to go all the way back into it, but there is a major narrative in the country right now about GOP Speaker of the House, principled conservative Christian and America First Donald Trump supporter Mike Johnson now being willing to remain in his position as Speaker with Democrat help. The uniparty is being put on full display, and the uniparty left and uniparty right will still join together in denying the existence of the uniparty and trying to marginalize anyone who talks about the uniparty. The uniparty is a conspiracy theory. It is peddled by conspiracy theorists. In fact, you know it's a conspiracy theory because of who's saying it. It's those conspiracy theorists. And when have they ever been right? Back to the times. If establishment Washington is upset about the possibility that he returns, that is a selling point to his base around the country that is alienated from the people in power. And that's true. I've got to hand it to Peter Baker. That is well observed, Peter. You are exactly right that Donald Trump striking fear into the hearts of the members of the uniparty who know exactly what they've done is a critical selling point. In fact, it would be much harder to sell Donald Trump without that. The panic is how you know it's working. Washington, of course, has never been fertile Trump territory. Who cares? It is a foreign-occupied international city-state. He won just 5% of the vote in the nation's capital in 2020, and it is hardly surprising that the governing class is unsettled by attacks on the deep state. Even many Republicans in the Capitol are nervous about Trump. But don't worry, everybody. That's not because there's a uniparty there and Donald Trump is going after the uniparty. It's just because the good Republicans also realize, like all of the Democrats do, that Donald Trump is the real threat. And if you don't accept the mental gymnastics it takes to make that claim, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. There is no uniparty. We've made that clear. It's been debunked. The District of Columbia is so far the only place other than Vermont to support Nikki Haley over Mr. Trump in this year's Republican primaries. And we know that Republican primaries, unlike all of our general elections, are very free and fair, safe and secure. And the reported results accurately reflect the will and intent of the voters. There's also no manipulation from the other party or from people changing their registrations or from any of the other normal methods that are used to generate fraudulent results in elections. Washington, D.C., though, may legitimately be the only place in the country where Donald Trump could lose in a legitimate election. But Mr. Trump's flirtation with authoritarian figures and language has raised the specter of a Washington vastly different even than during his first term, when he was at times restrained by establishment Republicans, military officers, and career civil service officials who are less likely to surround him in a second. And again, there's no uniparty and there's no deep state. It's just that there are all of these career establishment entrenched bureaucrats, politicians, civil service officials, establishment Republicans, and military officers working to restrain the duly elected president from being able to implement his agenda in office. It's not a deep state. They're just responsible people who understand the true danger of Donald Trump being a duly elected president in the United States. In order to preserve democracy, you absolutely must override the will of the people at every opportunity. And if you're unable to do that, well, then you just need to increase mass suffering to a scale never seen before so that the people understand they must change their will and agree to allow them to do what must be done in order to temporarily reduce the suffering of everyone just a little bit. But hey, what do I know? I'm just a conspiracy theorist who believes that there is a deep state and that there is a uniparty, and Peter Baker also believes it because although he denies it in his words, he simply proves the understanding that it exists in his other words. We need a word for when something is debunked and revealed as true at exactly the same time in exactly the same space. I feel like you couldn't even express an idea like that with the English language. You would probably have to just get a Chinese symbol to represent a paradox of such high quality. His rhetoric this time around has centered more than before on power and how he would increase it and use it if he won again. And of course, this is what we discussed with the Time Magazine article, that long feature last week. It was all about Donald Trump acquiring power for himself. He wanted to wield all of this undue power and influence in order to further his ego-driven quest for wealth and acclaim. There are no principles at work because Donald Trump doesn't have any principles. It's all about his narcissism all the time. That's why he does all of this stuff. The rest of America may not take what he says seriously, said former Representative Stephanie Murphy, Democrat of Florida. But I think you're hearing the uncomfortable chatter in Washington among Democrats and Republicans because they understand, having worked with him in the past, that when he says something, he means it. Well, that's so weird for a liar. Ms. Murphy, who served on the House committee that investigated the events of January 6, 2021, did not hesitate when asked about her plan B. Portugal, she said promptly. She has thought it through. Portugal has a lot of appeal, beautiful, charming, and less expensive than elsewhere in Europe, and is on many lists in Washington. Oh, isn't that great that she knows where she's going to escape to? So she was on the illegitimate show trial, the kangaroo court of the J6 committee, an actual primetime television show to convince child-brained Americans that those MAGA extremists were the greatest threat to them and their children. That little piece of the hate movement. She also took big money from corporations associated with the Chinese Communist Party and has taken money from Full Sail University, which is a for-profit college system, something Democrats are supposed to be adamantly against, at least in principle. But who cares about principles? The only principle that really matters is opposing Donald Trump and MAGA extremists. That's why she does what she does. But Stephanie Murphy is not trying to leave the country because she's a political criminal. That's just so crazy. A conspiracy theory like the Uniparty and the deep state. There is a spectrum of how serious people really are. Ms. Murphy said in her case, it is mostly mordant humor. I think I'm being flippant because I would like to think I wouldn't have to be a refugee for the second time in my life from political persecution, said the former congresswoman, whose family escaped Vietnam when she was a child. According to Murphy's bio, she escaped communist-controlled Vietnam in 1979 when she was 6 months old and now supports a communist regime in America, and she's worried about being a refugee again. David Urban, a Trump ally who worked on his 2016 and 2020 campaigns, said apprehensive Washingtonians have gotten themselves into a dither because they cannot, quote, look past the bluster to the substance and are suffering from, quote, Trump derangement syndrome. The chatter in class is freaking out, he said. There are plenty of people who see the dark side of the moon with Trump, and there's a good contingency in Washington who can't wait for him to get here. He added, they really think it's going to be the end of democracy as we know it, and I think it's misplaced. In fact, Mr. Urban said, a new Trump presidency would still be subject to checks and balances that would restrain any extreme impulses. There's also the fact that these are not extreme impulses. There are plenty of grown-ups, plenty of serious people who will want to roll in a second Trump administration. And things really have reached a point of ridiculousness with the adults in the room narrative. That's what quote-unquote centrists who wanted to pretend that they were serious people would say in their Biden support in 2020. Well, it doesn't matter what Joe Biden represents. He's not an extremist. Donald Trump just causes too many problems. What we need is not just Joe Biden. What we need is to get the adults back in the room. And by that, of course, they mean the establishment. They mean the Uniparty. Because when the Uniparty is there and working together, they just argue for show, and always within the bounds of what's comfortable for people on quote-unquote both sides of the Uniparty. What it means to them to have the adults back in the room is to have all of their anti-MAGA sentiments expressed freely in public with no pushback. They get to work together in their efforts to marginalize anyone who might oppose the Uniparty. That is their comfort zone. That is what they are working to restore. It is like their own reputational safe space, which can only be provided by systems of authority. They are child brains around the intellectual kids table, and now the adults are back in the room, making sure that no one is going to interrupt the intellectual kids table with any of the no-no words. These people are adults in age only. Their primary concerns are having physical, material comforts, getting what they want when they want it, and being applauded for expressing agreement with all the right things while accomplishing nothing else. That's what it means for the adults to be back in the room. Those people are going to take care of keeping us safe and making sure no one can say anything mean about us. Back to the times. Moreover, for all the doomsday talk inside the Beltway this spring, plenty of people have made vows to flee in the past if the candidate they opposed won. Whether it was George W. Bush for the left or Barack Obama for the right, without actually following through. Every 4 years, whenever it looks like a Republican might win, Democrats rev up the "I will leave America" rhetoric. Yet none of them ever do, said Douglas High, a Republican strategist. This might be more of an attention-getting tactic. But many in Washington speculating about travel plans are not seeking publicity. Indeed, many who discussed it in recent days did so only if guaranteed that their names would not be used for fear of making themselves more of a target. The range and seniority of people who talk about it is striking. They include current and former White House officials, cabinet secretaries, members of Congress, agency directors, intelligence and law enforcement officials, military officers, political strategists, and journalists. The topic came up repeatedly at the swirl of Washington soirees surrounding the recent White House Correspondents Association dinner. That's the dinner where they have a comedian come in and then roast the politicians and the media present, which makes them feel very powerful, very cool. They have a red carpet where people take their pictures. They feel very important. It's Hollywood for ugly people. You basically have all of the attention seekers in Washington, D.C., who want to feel cool, and want to feel powerful, getting together, then all of the after parties, and everybody's talking about what's going to happen when Trump wins. Do they need to flee? Imagine what is going to happen to the real estate market in Washington, D.C. It'll be a flea market. One person high on Trump's enemies list said that getaway planning is a regular matter of discussion among those targeted over the years on the former president's social media accounts. Another favorite Trump target said it is raised, quote, over and over again, particularly among spouses of those seen at risk. What does it mean to be at risk? Isn't that a pretty direct admission that some of them really do have reasons to flee because they are going to be prosecuted? They're not going to be prosecuted because people on Twitter don't like them. They're going to be prosecuted because they've committed crimes right out in the open that they promote. They're proud of what they've done. It's in this article. They're pleased with people who have actually subverted the will of the people. They have stolen elections. They have supported the usurpation of our union. They're not at risk because Trump supporters online post mean things about them. A European ambassador said it comes up at least twice a week with Washington figures joking about needing asylum. It's definitely been a topic of conversation, said Stephen A. Cook, a Middle East scholar at the Council on Foreign Relations. Mr. Cook has no personal reason to fear Mr. Trump's retribution, but dreads the onset of a more autocratic form of government like that he has seen in places like Egypt and Pakistan. Oh yes, that is the big fear, an autocratic form of government. Not that everyone the Council on Foreign Relations works with is a corrupt globalist whose entire agenda is antithetical to the good of the American people. That's not the reason. It's not because they're hell-bent on world domination and willing to violate the human rights of anyone who stands in their way. It's not that they start wars or operate human trafficking networks. It's that everyone's concerned about autocratic government. His possible refuge? Abu Dhabi, he said, acknowledging the irony that, quote, a little Jewish kid from Long Island, end quote, might feel safer in the United Arab Emirates than his homeland. Ah, yeah, that really makes sense. Everyone's going to buy that. Perhaps because we're in Washington and it's a bubble, maybe we're overplaying it, Mr. Cook said. But it's not as hard to imagine as it once was. Until relatively recently, I shared the idea that the United States was sprinkled in fairy dust and it couldn't happen here. But too much has happened, and maybe it could. Yeah, it's been happening. Just not to you, Stephen A. Cook, because you are never the one targeted. You are the targeter. The regime you support is the regime that has carried out these atrocities, not only in the United States, but in every other country where it's happened. This is a total inversion within the false reality. With Mr. Cook leaving is just talk for now, but others are going further. They have researched family history to see if they could qualify for a passport from, say, Ireland, Poland, or Germany. They have been updating passports and looking for property to buy in Europe. Some have hired lawyers to explore their options. And I can't recall if we covered this on the podcast, but a month or so ago, there were a few of these articles floating around about how it was the new thing for our upper crusty elites to be figuring out what other passports they can get. They're actually trying to create passport portfolios. They want to have a bunch of options for when they determine that their time in America is up. David Andelman, 79, a longtime journalist who already lives part-time in France, wrote on CNN's website this past week that he and his wife might move there full-time if Mr. Trump wins and has, quote, found a growing sentiment that we are hardly alone, end quote. The day that his column posted online, he said his real estate broker in France received 45 calls from Americans looking to do the same. A lawyer who has clashed with Mr. Trump is among those who have been studying his European roots in case he needs to establish residency. The conversation, he said, has gone from a knowing joke to prudent contingency planning. It would be, quote unquote, madness to dismiss the risk, he said. It would be madness to dismiss what risk? What is the risk? Being prosecuted for crimes you have committed? Because otherwise, what are they claiming is going to happen? Donald Trump is going to direct his Justice Department to just go rounding people up, planting evidence, tampering with that evidence, censoring people, arresting them for violations of the speech codes that Trump has certainly made up, sending them to jail? Is he going to debank them? Is he going to call them domestic terrorists for going to school board meetings? Is Trump going to try to use state power to emotionally and physically abuse their children? No, Trump's not going to do any of that stuff. These people are at risk because they have committed crimes. These are the people who tell us there can be no two-tiered system of justice in America. Everyone is equal under the law, while they promote political persecutions and prosecutions. They tell us about the importance of democracy, but worry that if the people elect Donald Trump, then he is going to be an autocratic, authoritarian dictator who's rounding up his political opponents just because they're his political opponents. These people are insane. A former government official who angered Mr. Trump said it is not a trivial conversation or purely humor. While this person expressed optimism that American institutions would prevent major injustices, anyone targeted by Mr. Trump could still be made, quote unquote, miserable by investigations, grand juries, lawyer fees, and career-killing publicity. So basically, every aspect of the lawfare regime that has been used to oppress American citizens and the political opposition for decades in politically compromised court systems under a system of not laws, but rules, regulations, and precedents that could never pass constitutional muster if challenged all the way up to the Supreme Court, But they never could be challenged that far until the last few years, because the Uniparty's lawfare system makes the process miserable. And think about what we were being told here. Former government officials, not part of any Uniparty or any deep state, people who have done absolutely nothing wrong, who couldn't even be accused of a crime, they are willing to uproot their lives and move to foreign countries to avoid being questioned in investigations. What are they saying about A, their patriotism, and B, their faith in the judicial system, their faith in the laws they've helped to create, the precedent they themselves have set, the lines on the field that they drew? What does it say about all of that, that they are willing to leave the country to avoid being questioned in investigations? This regime, this Uniparty, this deep state, has Peter Navarro in prison right now because he didn't respond to a congressional subpoena from the Sham January 6th committee, the primetime television show committee that Stephanie Murphy was on. And all of these people think that is an act done by the adults in the room. Peter Navarro is rightfully in prison because he ignored a congressional subpoena. That is what they say. And now they are proponents of the idea of leaving the country in order to ignore a congressional subpoena and not be put in prison. And let's close this out. Brian Catalis, a scholar at the Middle East Institute who has worked at the National Security Council, the State Department, and the Pentagon, said a friend from the Obama administration recently went to London and scoped out possible real estate and schools. "My view is a little less hair on fire," he said, expressing faith in the country's resiliency. "I'm going to ride this ship if it goes down, dumping buckets overboard. I don't think it's sinking. But if it starts going in that direction, my attitude is not to jump off the ship. We don't have better places to go." Okay, Brian Catalis, you sound like you are not guilty. Everybody else quoted in this article sounds extremely, extremely guilty. But there's something kind of weird about this article. Let's just go back to the beginning a second. Portugal, Australia, Canada, France, Poland. Well, okay, but what about Israel? Because we have something like 90 members in Congress who have right of return, and certainly far more than that in the federal bureaucracy and in the executive branch, the military-industrial complex, lobbyists, media figures, university officials. How come Peter Baker never mentioned anyone going to Israel? I mean, that's the thing about right of return. And by the way, right of return is for anyone who is deemed to be acceptably Jewish being eligible for Israeli citizenship upon request. They get to seek refuge in the quote-unquote homeland, which kind of provides a crazy incentive structure. And one would think results in an inordinately high population of people who are escaping accountability for things they did on behalf of or under the protection of that global regime that no longer happen to be acceptable in the nations whose societies they exploited while committing all those crimes on behalf of the regime. Now, from my days as a Hollywood liberal, I remember what that mindset was like. You convince yourself that all of the panic and all of the fear being created about what might happen if a Republican gets in power, you kind of embody all of that. You really come to believe it's all true and real. You end up repeating crazy nonsense like, "I can't keep living in a country where women are paid 79 cents on the dollar for the same work." Or, "I can't live in a country where unarmed black men are just gunned down in the streets by white police officers." You basically spend all your time, day after day, week after week, year after year, repeating what the television says, talking about how you can't possibly deal with this or that injustice. And you make all these claims that, you know, are kind of dramatized, but that helps show people just how much you mean it. "My goodness, you're so afraid that you're ready to leave the country? Well, I guess you must have good reason. That makes me more afraid. Maybe I'll have to leave the country too." And people really get into that, and they repeat it over and over and over again. So when the other guy wins, what response do you have? Well, they make excuses for why things didn't go their way, And then they hope they'll just never have to talk about it again. They'll vote harder next time. They'll get their way and everything will be okay. You don't want to actually uproot your life. You just wanted people to know that you have really strong feelings. Now, all of that is a very child-brained, very vaccinated-sounding way to approach someone from the other side winning a free and fair, safe and secure election. I have no doubt that people I used to know are in Hollywood right now saying these things. And they're going to say them more and more and more up until the end of the year or whenever this quote unquote election gets resolved, probably like next April sometime. But at no point will 99%+ of them ever mean it, and it's likely that none of them will move away. That is not what's happening with these people the New York Times is describing. And that is not what has made this a topic of conversation everywhere you go in Washington, D.C., 6 months before the election. What are these people scared of? Why don't they trust the justice system they tell us to trust? And of course, they don't trust the justice system. They trusted the justice system to the extent that they knew they could not be targeted, or they knew enough people, they had enough people on their side who would protect them. Or even if somehow they were to be held accountable, there would probably be a payoff for silence waiting on the other end, as there is in any mafia movie. But what this will be most of all is an attempt to recast themselves as victims who were forced to leave their country. Trump winning the election, if it's possible to win a rigged election, will not be portrayed as proof of his popularity, despite the fact that everyone knows at this point that Trump is going to win. And most people know that he won last time, too. It'll be portrayed as illegitimate. The authoritarian, autocratic dictator has now seized power. He already had the courts. Now nothing stands in his way. He doesn't even have to run for re-election again. And now he's going to weaponize the government and target his political opponents. He's going to become the new Hitler. They've been saying that for 9 years now. And we even heard the reference in that article. That is how they have framed Donald Trump's saying the word vermin a few months back. They will be the victims. They will be the targets. They are going to be forced from their country, forced from their homes. And with that in mind, let's switch to the New York Post from yesterday. Inside Trump's plan to deport nearly 20 million illegal migrants from the U.S. Donald Trump has vowed to deliver the, quote, largest mass deportation effort, end quote, in American history, if he gets back into office next year, targeting millions of illegal migrants across the country. The 45th president has frequently spoken about his deportation agenda and recently indicated in a Time magazine interview that he would leverage local law enforcement, the National Guard, and the military to carry out his plan, similar to the dragnet-style sweeps of Operation Wetback under former President Dwight Eisenhower that shipped more than 1 million migrants out in 1954. And of course, because now, in our common parlance, wetback is considered a racial pejorative, that means that Eisenhower's operation was very racist. The Trump 2024 campaign has not gotten into the details of what resources would be needed to find, detain, and deport the, quote, nearly 20 million, end quote, illegal migrants they say are currently in the U.S. But carrying out an operation that large would require a massive expansion of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, collaboration with the State Department, and a boost in funding from Congress, former ICE officials tell the Post. And hey, if former ICE officials say it, they must be right. It's strange that they wouldn't want to be quoted for this. The 20 million claim from the Trump campaign is, quote, not an unreasonable estimate, end quote, given the fluctuations and record-breaking number of migrants entering the U.S. under the Biden administration. Eric Ruark, Numbers USA's director of research, told the Post. There's probably between 15 and 20 million, given the number of people we've seen coming over, Ruark said, contrasting with the official estimate of 11 million from the U.S. Census Bureau. The U.S. Census Bureau has kept that number at 11 million for what, 2 decades at this point? Longer? We could go back 25, 30 years ago. We were told that the population of this country hit 300 million in 2006. 30 years ago, 1994, the reported population of the United States of America was under 263 million. Now we're told it's approaching 340 million. So 75 million more people than we had 30 years ago, while native birth rates are declining. Now, certainly, some of that is due to legal immigration, which should be welcomed when we need it, and family formation among those legal immigrants, which should also be welcomed. I mean, if you want to be American and you come here the proper way, you should start a family. Be American, raise Americans. This isn't about background or color, but we don't have to sit and pretend that our population is skyrocketing while native birth rates are declining, and it's from something other than mass illegal immigration. 20 million is a low ball. Tom Homan, former acting director of ICE under Trump, said the agency has, quote, systems in place that are very good at identifying people, end quote. But the speed of the deportations would depend on the resources on hand. A lot of that is going to be up to Congress. We need officers. We need detention beds. We need transportation contracts, because we would have more flights heading out of the country and more bus removals down to the border, Homan said. And if you have considered the theory of devolution and think that maybe there's something to that whole thing, then it's worth considering immigration in that context. A lot of the infrastructure that has been set up to facilitate the regime's slave trade worldwide can be used for moving people out, just as it's used for bringing people in. And I think we need to be careful not to be too flippant about the actual human crisis that all of this is going to entail. A lot of the people who have come here are not going to want to leave and not going to want to return to their home countries. But unfortunately, you take that risk by deciding to come here illegally. It is impossible to have both national sovereignty and open borders. And because the system has been so exploited, moving people out acts as both a solution to the problem and a deterrent. We would still prioritize criminals and national security threats first. They are the most dangerous for the country, he added. But I would say no one is off the table. If you're in this country illegally, then we'll remove you. Asked by the Post whether he would go back to work in a second Trump term, Homan said he would strongly consider taking a job if asked. John Fear, former ICE chief of staff under Trump, said, quote, there's no doubt that ICE would benefit from a significant increase in officers, agents, and detention space, end quote, and that a Trump administration would undoubtedly make that request known to Congress. But, Fear argued, ICE already has the capacity to detain more migrants than are currently being held under the Biden administration. This effort will likely include citywide operations where officers from different parts of the country are brought in to conduct worksite investigations and make arrests within the course of weeks within any given jurisdiction. This will require a whole-of-government approach, Fear went on. Every part of the government that has a nexus to immigration has a role to play here, from Health and Human Services to the State Department to U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. Every part of the government can assist in reducing illegal immigration. Fear also said that, quote, I'm sure I will be involved in some capacity, end quote, if Trump takes office, but did not say what role he might play. Apart from the reluctance of a possible Democratic-run Congress to fund enhanced enforcement operations, a Trump administration could run into hurdles deporting migrants to their countries of origin if those governments refuse reentry. That problem would have to be solved through the work of the State Department, along with a hardline foreign policy, the ex-officials told the Post. And so you can see the strategy here. to making the deportations impossible. They believe they'll still have some level of support within the State Department. That is one of the homes of the deep state, historically at least working in partnership with the CIA. They facilitate the United States' role on behalf of the global regime in taking over countries around the world. So they believe they'll still have deep state power there. They'll be able to subvert the deportation process like that. Trump, of course, he has no leverage on these other countries. They're going to just tell him no. That's the plan. Get other members of the regime, those countries on the other end of the worldwide slave trade, UN migration, the NGOs in those countries, just put the pressure there and make sure those countries won't take all of these illegal aliens back, and then Trump can't do the deportation. And you just hold on to that for 4 years while subverting Trump's administration, distracting people, make sure they don't have funds and resources, and none of it can get done. And they will keep the product of that slave trade in place for all of the organizations who have been promised low-skill, low-wage work from people who can't complain and can't leave. Fear argued the State Department could use the Section 243D of the Immigration and Nationality Act to issue visa sanctions against countries that refuse to take back their citizens. When a country hears that the United States will not allow its residents in if they don't take their people back, those countries quickly cooperate, he told the Post. ICE must also work around the problem of sanctuary cities who refuse to cooperate with removal operations, Fear said. ICE would prefer that all states and cities cooperate with federal law enforcement, he warned, but those that choose not to are going to see an increase in operations within their communities. ICE will have no choice but to conduct large operations. And so I was thinking about these two articles from Sunday morning because thematically, they revolve around the idea that Donald Trump's return is going to force people to leave this country in two different ways. One, through direct deportations of first criminal illegal aliens and then just other illegal aliens, but also by members of the administrative state, the deep state, the uniparty, the regime as it exists in this country, whether it's people in government, lobbyists, professors, corporate board members, no matter who, they will claim to be political refugees seeking asylum from the authoritarian, dictatorial Donald Trump regime as Donald Trump turns himself into Hitler. That is going to be the public narrative. It is all being framed. It is all being seeded. And these stories run concurrently, I believe, for a reason, as part of the effort to frame and seed that narrative and that public perception of what will be happening. And then all of a sudden, the most elite members of that uniparty, corporate America, academia, etc., that old guard, they, despite being responsible for all of this, will turn themselves into victims. They are fleeing the country to avoid accountability or even participating in the process of seeking accountability for their allies. And this will not only give them victimhood status, it is something that they will be easily able to conflate with Donald Trump's deportations. And when you put those two things together, what do you have? Well, you have Donald Trump as Hitler, and all of his supporters, well, will be the Nazis. And you know what you can do to Hitler and Nazis? You can direct state violence at them. And thank goodness we've watched these very people promote the funding of Nazi battalions in Ukraine for the last 2+ years. Otherwise, people might believe that those most opposed to the funding of those Nazis and everything else that regime does are the real Nazis. You can watch all of this coming into reality in the narrative right now. And this might sound a little doomy or a little black-pilled, but it's not. I don't believe this is going to work. Part of the reason it's not going to work is because we understand, and the general public is coming to understand, how these narratives are put together. We can't wait until normiedom catches up with these narratives once they are already being pushed by the mainstream media. By then, it's too late. By then, you end up making viral content about how the leftists are hypocrites too. Look at what the Democrats did. That is for stupid people. Being way out ahead of these narratives and calling it out as it's happening, as the seeding and the framing are developing, before anyone can ever believe that you might be actually onto something, it's those ideas that in the future will help people see all of this clearly as it develops before it reaches its final form. They will have to accept that Donald Trump has majority popularity in this country. They might even have to eventually allow the central narrative to accept that Donald Trump has had majority support in this country for years. And there's no way Trump lost. There's no way Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. They might have to accept all that. And when they do, they will also have to accept that they now need to claim 55, 60, 70% of American men and women must now be called Nazis. The ideal response to that when they start doing it is for that 55 or 60 or 70% or maybe more of American men and women to look at them, laugh at them, and then be like, yeah, okay, Nazi, no one believes that. Because we're dealing with people who believe that they will be writing the history because they've always written it before. And every time they do, it is total inversion within the false reality. They have made every decision and taken every action that we were all educated with their education to believe were the sorts of things done by history's worst regimes. They've done all of them. Censorship, propaganda, segregation, forced medical experimentation, redefining language, political persecutions and prosecutions, illegally changing laws, stealing elections, staging false flags, stoking ethnic division, creating famines, using work camps, all of it. They're doing all of it just as they have in the past. And because they have always had the opportunity to write the history and rewrite the history as they also write our potential futures, they always reframe themselves as the victims of absolutely all of that. And if you don't think they're lining up to do that again, I think you're missing something important about the narrative progression we're seeing. They are absolutely aiming for the opportunity to pull the old switcheroo and make us the Nazis. And through the propaganda and the censorship, they have already been creating an historic record of how we were the Nazis the whole time. The only way to get past this is to be way out in front of it. And if you want to say I'm a conspiracy theorist, go right ahead. But I'm not the one who believes that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. And now that the New York Times has admitted that vaccines have side effects, what do you think they're going to say when they report that millions of people are dying from the vaccines and Donald Trump made them do it? I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic, and Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com. And you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range. It's high noon!
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm your moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at I'myourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'myourmoderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon, down on the range.
It's high!